Blog Talk Radio.
If I knew then what I know now, no, I wouldn't change much of anything anyhow. It was 50-50, and I won the coin toss when you danced with me at the Huntington's Waltz. When you danced with me at the Huntington's Waltz.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to Help for HD Live, brought to you by Teva Pharmaceuticals and the Griffin Foundation. I'm your host, Sharon Thomason, and today our guest is the amazing Leah Amberly Barker. Leah is a journalism major in college in North Texas. She'll have to tell me again the name of the university because I forgot what she told me, but she is majoring in journalism, and she is the author of a wonderful blog called Capturing the Corners that truly does capture her journey with Huntington's disease. So welcome, Leah.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
I'm so excited that you're here. I have enjoyed reading your blog and keeping up with your journey so much. You are an absolutely amazingly gifted writer, and glad that you're here to share some things with us. So let's jump right into the interview, if that's okay.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. So first of all, would you tell us about how HD came into your life and your journey to a diagnosis?
Well, it's actually, I don't know, it's not your usual HD story. So my grandfather growing up, I just remember he was really sick with HD. I knew the name of the disease, and I knew that it looked really scary. And my grandfather, they lived all the way up in Muncie, Indiana, and so I didn't see him that much, but he ended up passing away a couple years ago from the disease, and I was 21 at the time. I had always had some really bad mental problems, I guess, but they started getting gradually worse over the years, and I kind of started thinking to myself, like, man, like, I really feel like there's just something not right with me. I just always felt kind of off, I guess, but and then with my mother, who was at risk, she was, I think, 44 at the time, and she didn't want to get tested, so I kind of snuck off and did it, and I wasn't going to tell anybody, and I was doing it. I told my sister, who was also at risk, because we had been seeing kind of like some signs in my mom, but we didn't know for sure. And we kind of wanted to know. And then it was also kind of for me to kind of be able to pinpoint, like, oh, like, you know, like this is why I've been struggling so much. But, I was 21. Yeah. I went and got tested, and it came back positive. And, my mom ended up finding out eventually, but, it was really strange though, because it was, Huntington's disease has always been a taboo subject in our family. I was told
and
growing up that...
And that's true in a lot of families. Unfortunately, that's true in a lot of families. Yeah.
Yeah, I was surprised to find that out. But we were told growing up that only males could inherit the disease. So, you know, I never thought twice about it until I got a little older. But that's kind of how it came about.
How did your mother react when she found out that you had tested?
Not too good, as you might imagine. I think I had some sort of clinical study that I had signed up for, the PREDICT-HD. I don't know if you're familiar with that, that clinical trial. But I think I accidentally sent the mail to my mom's house instead of my house, and she always opens my mail, even though I tell her not to. So, yeah, it didn't come about in the best way, but it ended up working out for the best, honestly, because now we can, you know, get on the right track towards medication and seeing the doctor she needs, so.
Mm-hmm. Did she ever get tested herself?
After I tested positive and we knew that she was obviously gene positive, she went and got tested to find out her CAG count, which is the same as mine. It's 43.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we know that testing gene positive is not the same as a diagnosis with
right.
HD. So how old were you when you were diagnosed?
So I can't say that it's like a really like, you know, spot on diagnosis just because I live in Dallas and the neurologist that I've seen thus far, you know, I've kind of been the one that has educated them on HD rather than the other way around. But a lot of my like movements, like I have a lot of involuntary movements, a lot of twitching and a lot of mental problems. And of course they say some of that is due to my anxiety and things like that. But I believe I was 22 when I went to the neurologist and they did some cognitive tests and things like that. So now I'm taking medication for it and it's very, subtle. It's not like intense or anything. But yeah, that's pretty much it.
Well, you know, unfortunately we still live in a world where there are many doctors who won't diagnose without chorea and who will diagnose many, many, many other things before they'll actually decide, well, this is Huntington's. And personally, I feel that's really unfortunate because it leaves people in limbo and it leaves I'm glad you're educating your doctor. And that's something that we hear a lot, and it's unfortunate, but it's good that you are willing and able to do that. So,
it is hard,
but you do what you have to do, don't you?
Yes, exactly.
What was it like for you? Realizing that you did have Huntington's?
I wasn't in the best place, first of all, when I went and got tested, just because I was kind of raised on this notion that mental illnesses, mental diseases don't exist, and my family, even after I tested positive for Huntington's disease, some of my family, I should say, continued and continues to this day to tell me that everything is all in my head. So I didn't have the best support system going on. I was kind of alone and not really educated on HD until after I got tested. And then after I got tested, I was really like depressed more than usual for a while, and I wasn't taking the right medications and stuff like that. So it wasn't too good for the first 6 months. I pretty much kind of did nothing. I kind of just like laid around, you know. Then I found out about the HDSA and HDO and all those other great organizations, and I decided to get plugged in just so I can kind of see what other people were going through. And that really helped me a lot, being able to go to convention and being able to meet other people who are struggling in the HD world. Uh-huh. Really brought me out of that dark place and helps me kind of stand on my own two feet and feel like, oh, yeah, like I'm not alone in all of this. Like there are other people who are struggling too. And I mean, I don't want to hear that other people are struggling, but the fact that, you know, I'm not the only one in the world with this disease really, really helped me. And it that's kind of what started the whole blog.
Mhm. Yeah. That not feeling isolated is a very empowering.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Yes. Definitely.
So you said that's what started your blog.
Yes.
And your blog is called Capturing the Corners. How mm-hmm. can people read your blog?
So you can either just go to capturingthecorners.com or Capturing the Corner has a Facebook page, a Twitter, and an Instagram. So if you like or follow any of those pages, then you can get the latest updates and the latest stories that I post and my rants, my Facebook rants and things like that. Or you uh-huh. can also subscribe to my website, and then you'll be getting direct emails from me personally about things that, you know, other people don't get to read, and then you'll be able to see when I post things also.
And you do that on capturingthecorners.com.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Why did you name it Capturing the Corners?
It's so funny because no one's ever asked me that question, and I've been prepared for it for so long. But I used to follow this dad blog, which is so random, and I don't even remember who the guy was, but he was a great writer. The blog doesn't exist anymore, but it was called Pacing the Panic Room, and I loved his blog, and I loved the way he wrote, and I was like, oh, well, like, maybe I should come up with a name kind of like that, with, like, where the verbiage is placed and the, you know.
Uh-huh,
but I
kind of
thought, yeah, exactly, yeah, I can't think of the word. So I was actually into photography at the time, so I wanted to put that in the name kind of. So that's where, like, capturing comes in. I mean, now I think of it as, like, capturing is like I'm writing down the stories, and then like the corners, you know, there's like the corners of people's lives that they don't really want to talk about and they don't really want to bring up. So that's pretty much it. That's how the name came about.
That's it. It's a very cool title. I like it a lot.
Thank you. Thanks.
You're welcome. What are your favorite pieces that you've written?
I would have to say probably She Will Dance, which is a poetic piece, and my blog partner, really good friend.
I love that piece.
Oh, thank
I'm
you.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I love that piece.
No.
You wrote that as a performance piece, right?
I did, and I actually perform it at I performed it at my university, which is the University of North Texas, for our mental illness club.
uh-huh.
But so that piece was about my really good friend and, like I said, my blog partner at the time. I brought her on for a little bit. She was going through the testing process, and for some reason, I just felt so sure. I was like, oh, like, she's not going to test positive. Like, she's so normal. I don't know. So I was really shocked and, like, surprised and angry and sad and disappointed when she told me that she had tested positive. And so
yeah.
I just had all these emotions built up, and I just, like, spilled it all out when I was writing She Will Dance. And it was a poetic piece. It's about HD. And it's about, pretty much it was about her, yeah. And but I like it because I get to perform it, and when I do perform it, I get so emotional and so just like yelling it into the microphone, and it's just such a therapeutic piece for me and hopefully for other people too. So I really like that piece.
And it's something that people can watch. It's on YouTube, right? I know I saw the video when it was posted on Facebook, and it touched me so deeply. And
that means so much.
Writing is such a powerful tool for touching people's hearts. And when you use it in spoken word performance, it's just doubles and triples the power.
Oh, my goodness. Well, thank you so much for saying that.
Where can people see that? Where can people see you performing that? Is it on YouTube?
Yes, I have a YouTube channel. I'm sorry, I forgot to add that in with my other social media. It's just Capturing the Corners, the same as my website and my other social media pages. But and just a disclaimer, it's very amateur, and I'm just reading it. So it's nothing like crazy, like amazing, but it was just something that I had to get out at the time.
Yeah. Well, I think it's wonderful. What are
your
other favorite pieces that you've written?
I would probably say Testing, which it's not a too, I guess, like grammatically correct and really like perfect piece, because it was my first one. But that's the reason why I like it, because, you know, I mean, I went and got tested, and I didn't know how to convey any of these emotions, and I hadn't written in so long. So when I sat down and I wrote that piece, and then it just got like 500 shares on Facebook, I was so shocked and surprised. But I don't know. When I go back and read it, like, it still just takes me back to everything that I was feeling and back to my faith. So it's really therapeutic for me to be able to go back and read that piece. So that would have to be one of my other favorites.
I'm sure that the sharing was a result of the fact that it resonated with a lot of people who either have been through testing or were thinking about going through testing or have a loved one who was going through the testing process. So
Oh no, you're fine. I was just saying, I just hope other people got some good out of it, hopefully. if nothing else. So yeah, that was it.
Well, I'm sure that they did. Any other favorite pieces?
I mean, I don't really have much that I go back and read. I usually wait a good couple of months before I go back and read a piece, just because when I sit down to write it, I'm kind of just like spilling it out, and like it's therapy, and I want to get it out there, and I kind of want to like leave it there on the blog. Those two pieces, and then I don't know. It's hard to pick out favorites because it's like everything I wrote was so real at the time, you know. So when I go back and read it, it's always like brings me back. So I do enjoy that.
Yeah, that's great. What was the hardest piece to write?
The hardest piece to write. Probably also my testing piece, because it was the first one, like I said, and I was just saying, I just wrote down all my feelings and all of my emotions. But my other pieces that were kind of hard to write were probably My Mother's Keeper, which I just wrote, and it's about transitioning from, you know, daughter, someone who is taken care of, into like a caretaker. And it's hard for me to write just because when I'm writing it and then I like read it, I'm seeing my reality and everything that I'm feeling when I go back and read it. And it's also hard because I know that my parents read my blog, and it's kind of hard to be really open and raw and honest about something for the sake of other people getting something out of it, as well as myself getting something out of it, when you know that your parents are going to be reading what you're writing about them. So that's extremely difficult to deal with.
I can understand that.
Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah, that would be tough. What kind of reactions have you had to your blog?
Mostly good, which I've been really thankful for. A lot of people support it and leave me nice comments, and I always get so many nice messages from, you know, people around the world, and it's just so awesome. Like, I can't believe it. I mean, there are, of course, some negative reactions, which comes with anything that you, if you're putting yourself out there, you know. I've been very fortunate. It's been very few critics that I've run into, and a lot of just positive feedback, positive reinforcement, which just keeps me going, and it's amazing. I love it.
I know that I've seen comments from people who could really identify with what you've written, and who feel like, you know, kind of a kindred spirit type of thing. And I think that must make it worth it just by itself.
Oh, of course. Oh, my goodness. Even if I were to write a piece and only one person read it and was able to identify or get something out of it, then that's enough. Like, that's enough for me, you know? So it is really amazing.
But then you get a piece like the one with 500 shares, and you know that you've reached a lot of people, and there's no telling how many people have reshared the shares.
There's no way. It's crazy to me what, like, the fact that got that much attention. It was from people like my friends and my family who like didn't even know about Huntington's or anything. So that was really, really surprising to me, but it was awesome.
Yeah, because you're educating people as you go. I know this may be hard to talk about, but since you blogged about it, I'd like to ask, tell us about your battle with depression and suicidal ideation. I know this is something that a lot of our community deals with. So if you don't mind sharing that, I'd like for you to tell us about it.
Yeah, of course. And I'm actually really glad that you asked that question, because, like you said, it's a hard topic to talk about. And the whole theme of Capturing the Corners is we want to be the voice for the voiceless and the people who don't feel like there are others that are feeling the same way that they are. But depression, anxiety, really bad paranoia. Yes, I've had suicidal thoughts and things like that. But it's something, like you said, that the HD community deals with. It's in my family, especially, I've found that it's less of a physical thing for us and a lot more heavy on the mental, decay, I guess, which comes with it. And it's something
I hear that a lot.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever heard anybody say that, but
yeah.
It's good to know, though. But, yeah, I seriously, I have to wake up every morning, and I have to metaphorically put on my armor, and, you know, it's a battle that I fight every single day, and I'm constantly switching my medications, and I'm constantly trying to figure out what works for me and what works for my mom, and writing about it and blogging about it and reaching out to others. And it's a support system, I would say, most of all, more than even like the medication and stuff like that, that really keeps me going and motivated and just able to live my everyday life. You know what I'm saying? So I'm really, really thankful for that.
You know, it's,
but
yeah,
it's definitely struggle.
To hear that you battle with depression, because when talking to you, you seem so up and positive and bubbly. Do you think that true in your everyday life, that people wouldn't guess that it's something that you're struggling with?
Man, I mean, that's really nice to hear you say, first of all. That makes me feel really good, because sometimes I just don't know how others see me. But I would say the family and the friends that I have are super close to me. So, you know, of course they follow my blog and my website and everything like that. So they know what's going on there. But I'm also very open with them. So the people who are really close to me know that these are things that I deal with, but I hope that my acquaintances and people that I don't really know as well are able to look at me and maybe hear me be positive, even if it's not a positive situation, and be able to think, oh, wow, like she struggles with all these terrible, terrible things. Like, she seems like she's happy and she's great, which I am happy in certain ways. But, that's what I've got to concentrate on. But, I just hope that I portray that so that others can look at me and know that you don't have to stay down, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think in that way, you're a really positive role model for the community.
Thank you. I hope so. That's all I want. Seriously.
I know you use your blog and you use medication. Have you done any kind of counseling or group therapy?
Yeah, of course. So we have our HGSA Greater North Texas affiliate, which is in Dallas, and they have support groups. And I've met some really great people through that support system, who help me every single day. And, you know, they're older people. They're people more, you know, they've been through life. They've been through the whole HG thing. They know they can mentor me, I guess, in a sense, which I have a lot of people that I can go to with the HGSA and HGO and the camp that HGO has and the conventions that the HGSA has, and having our North Texas affiliate. So, yeah, I definitely have a lot of mentors, and I go to the support sessions when I can, and that's really helpful.
That's great. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about the HDO camp.
Oh my goodness, it's awesome. I don't even remember how I found out about it. To be honest,
probably
I guess I think I've. Yeah, probably Facebook, probably. But, yeah, when I found out that they were holding their first U.S. camp, I applied immediately. I was like, I definitely want to go to this. And my friends from convention, who I don't get to see very often because they live far away, were applying. So we got into that, and it's at a really cute little campsite in Maryland. I don't remember what the city is called, but it's so fun. I mean, it's the youth in HD around the U.S. We get together We have a really good time. We have counseling sessions, and we all get to talk and share our story. And then we get to go out and do team building activities and fun things together. And it's just a really amazing experience. So I would encourage anybody who might be a young person dealing with HD to apply for that camp, because they're having it again this year, and it's so awesome.
What ages is it open to?
Ooh, you know what? I'm not sure, to be honest, but the cutoff is like, I mean, I'm 24, so, and I went this year, but I mean, I think it, I want to say like 12 or 13 maybe, and then I think it cuts off at like 26 or something like that. Don't quote me on that. I'm really not sure.
Okay. So it's something that people could look into if they're interested. But basically for teens and young adults.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. And then suicidal ideation. I know suicide is something that it's such a hard topic to talk about, but it's so important in our community, because the suicide attempt rate and the suicide completion rate in Huntington's is so much higher than in the general population. And it's important to me personally, because I lost a brother-in-law to suicide, and my son survived two very serious suicide attempts.
I cannot even imagine what that must have been like for you, but oh my goodness. And this subject is a lot easier to write about than talk about. No, you're totally right. The suicide rate, I've had uncles that I've never met because they've committed suicide from the mental instabilities that HD can bring to the surface. But yeah, I mean, I know everyone's like, oh, you're so young. You know, you shouldn't be dealing with that, but it is unfortunately something that I've dealt with and that I'm not a stranger to. And I really hope my parents aren't listening to this. So sorry, Mom. But I've had not necessarily suicide attempts, but I'll be really, really close and like really wanting to carry through with it. And I usually just run to somebody, my family or my mom or my dad, and I just say like, please, you've got to help me. Like, I'm at my wit's end, and I don't go to my parents for problems like at all, but I do when that sort of thing is happening. And the first time that it happened, my mom didn't know what to do, so she put me into a mental facility that was awful, and I just wrote a piece about it called Exposing Insanity, and I think that's what it's called.
Yeah,
but
I read that piece. That's very powerful piece.
Oh, well, thank you.
And it touched me very deeply.
Well, that's really good to hear, because that's another subject that I'm like, man, none of my friends have ever been to a mental institution, so I don't know how many people are going to be able to relate to this. But it wasn't a good experience. I'm not saying that there aren't good mental institutions out there. I know that there are, but this one just was a bad experience, and it was kind of weird because, you know, I was feeling suicidal and everything. I went into that institution, and it made that feeling 10 times worse. So when I got out and I got back to my regular self, it felt like nothing compared to being inside of there. So that's kind of what accidentally saved me, I guess, the first time. Other times, I mean, like I said, I'll be like at my wit's end. I usually run to my sister, who's my number one supporter, and she's just so awesome. We're really close in age, so she helps me. You know, she'll talk to me. We'll go see my psychiatrist. We'll figure out what different medications that I should be taking and things like that. And really just being open and honest about it and not hiding that from the world and just getting it out there so that other people can relate helps me a lot too. So that's, I mean, there's no really easy way around that subject, but I guess that's as transparent as I can be.
Mm-hmm. So reaching out and talking to other people and make sure that you get into the doctor and get your meds adjusted. Yeah, those are huge things. And sometimes I know that it's hard to be honest with your doctor.
Oh, so. Yeah. It definitely is, especially after going to a mental institution where they're all doctors there. That really scared me for a while, and I was so scared to tell my doctor anything, but it's super important that you do. They're not going to haul you off somewhere. They're there to help you if you find the right doctor, which is can be hard also, but it's something that people really need to invest their time in if they're dealing with HD in any way. Just because that can be what gets you out of bed in the morning and what keeps you going for a while until you can kind of stand back up on your own two feet.
Absolutely. Are you familiar with the site HD Drug Works?
I don't believe that I am. I might be. I don't know.
That's a wonderful site that Dr. LaVon Goodman owns and maintains. She is a doctor who specializes in treating Huntington's disease, and she's a frequent guest on our radio show. She's in Washington State, and she has algorithms on her website for treating the various symptoms of Huntington's disease. So it's a wonderful resource when you're looking for information about medication.
That's great to know, because I was just asking for help on that the other day on an HD support group through Facebook. So that's great. I've never even heard of that. How have I not heard of that? That's crazy. But thank you for telling me.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome, and I will send you the link. Yeah, there's a whole lot more resources out there now than when I started this journey over 30 years ago. So it's important to share those things and let people know about everything that's out there. So
yes,
tell us what advice you have for someone who's dealing with severe depression, and also advice for their caregivers or their care partners?
First of all, the people that are dealing with Huntington's, medically, like inside of themselves, I would say, you know, you should definitely, I guess if you're in the earlier stages, I can't speak for those who are in the later stages, but pretty much what I said before, it's super, super important that you make sure that you're keeping your mental stability in check, and going to the doctor and making sure that you have the right combination of medication and things like that, so that because really what it is that people with HD, you know, you're missing some parts of your brain that are supposed to be there and that are supposed to be working better to make you feel normal. It's really important that you get treated medically for that. And then also, like I said, the support groups and you know, making sure that you don't isolate yourself too much, because that was one of my big problems, was isolating myself because I didn't want to burden anyone else. But really that was my downfall, because then you're just stuck with your own thoughts. And trust me, like, I've had the worst, just crippling depression and anxiety and paranoia to the point where it made me physically sick. And you don't want to let yourself go to that awful, dark place, and isolation for long periods of time can really bring that about. So make sure that you're just staying connected in the community as much as you can, and that you're getting the right sort of medical treatment that you need. And don't be afraid to ask for help, because I was so scared to ask for help. I didn't know what to do. But when I finally did ask for help, it saved my life, I think. But, and then for caregivers, I'm just barely coming into the caregiving world myself. So, I'm sure there's a lot more wise people out there who can better, give advice on this subject, but, make sure to do the same thing for yourself. I mean, being around, especially someone that you love who is changing mentally and who is just becoming a different person maybe, and having all these new scary physical symptoms, make sure that you're also keeping your mental health healthy and staying connected. There are plenty of HD caregivers out there who are connected in the social media world and things like that. There's a lot of support groups for caregivers as well, but make sure you're taking care of your mental health, and make sure that you know that, like, you're doing a great job. Like, so many caregivers that I've met just don't hear that enough. Like, and being a caregiver, I would much rather be, this is just me personally, and I hope no one gets mad at me for saying this, but me personally, I would much rather be sick and have my mom take care of me than like her be sick and me having to like take care of her, not because of the work and everything, but just because I don't want to lose her. And that's a hard thing to deal with. Like, so difficult. I can't even imagine why. I guess I can, because I'm becoming a caretaker slowly. But yeah, just make sure that you take care of yourself and that you stay connected, and that you make sure, I would say that it's not just you taking care of the other person constantly. Like, you need to, take some time out to go be with your friends or be with your husband or boyfriend, or, take time off for yourself and make sure that you're feeling okay.
That is great advice, Leah.
Thanks. I really don't know that much.
And, well, we hear so much from caregivers who become isolated. Just like people with the disease become isolated, the caregivers become isolated. Mm-hmm. So, that staying connected, that may be some of the most important advice you could give to anybody, whether they have the disease or they're caring for someone with the disease.
Mm-hmm.
So great insight and
no, thank you.
Wonderful advice. Do you have any advice for someone who may be listening and is interested in starting his or her own blog?
Yeah, absolutely. If you're thinking about starting a blog, just do it. Because even if, like I said, if nobody reads it, and if not a single soul reads it, but you're able to get a little bit of therapy out of writing your story down for people to possibly read, then that's great. And it really helped me. I didn't think that it would help me or that it would be therapeutic in any way, but it really has. And even if you're just writing for yourself, I mean, go for it. I mean, what's the harm in writing down your thoughts or your rants or anything that you want to write about? There's absolutely no harm in that, as long as you're not hurting other people. Even if nobody else sees it in the world, you'll get to at least maybe get some therapy out of it. So, I would definitely say that they should do it.
That's great advice. How do you publish it? What site do you use to create the blog that's accessible to the public?
So there are a lot of blogging websites. I had a blog, I think it was actually called Capturing the Corners too, which is where I brought it out of the same place. But it was on blogspot.com. But a really good website to use is WordPress. I think it's .org for the
mm-hmm.
For the blogs. But that way you get to write your story, and then you can put different tags, tag different words to it, so people can search your stories under different subjects, and then you can also go and read from other people's blogs and leave comments and things like that. So it's a really good place to start interacting and publishing, in my opinion.
And you can attach pictures to it also, right?
Yeah, you can do pictures, you can do videos. There's no end to what you can do on that site.
That's great. And people yeah. can follow you, and you can
oh,
follow
yeah, yeah.
other people.
Exactly, yeah. yeah.
I know a couple of people who use WordPress, so that seems
yeah,
to be
a
real
popular
site. One. Yeah.
yeah,
and pretty user-friendly.
Oh, definitely. So simple to use. You don't need any sort of coding or any sort of technical background. It's super easy to use.
Okay.
And
any last thoughts? I'm sorry.
No, I was just saying that WordPress is super easy to sign up for as well as use. But last thoughts? I mean, I just really hope that if nobody takes anything away from this or from capturing the corners, that they at least will take my advice when I say that you should get connected into the HD world and ask. Don't be afraid to ask for help. That goes for anybody, even if you have HD or if you've never even heard of HD. You know, don't be afraid to ask for help, because it doesn't make you look weak, and it doesn't make you look like you are a bad person or that you're asking for attention. That, you know, I feel like being vulnerable and being able to show others your weaknesses and things like that, number one, can save you medically and, you know, with the medical medication that you might need to receive. But mm-hmm. it can also help you get connected and just stay in the community. That's really my biggest thing, is that.
That's huge. That's so important.
Yes, it is.
Well, thank you so much, Leah, for being with Help for HD, for sharing your time, your experiences, and your thoughts with us today. Really valuable insights, and I hope people will be sure to check out your blog. Just great pieces there.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm just so excited that you agreed to come on.
Of course.
I would like to close today's show with, this is a new thing that we've added to Help for HD Live. We're going to give you headlines from the past week. And so I'd like to close today's show with a review of the past week's headline news for HD and JHD. First of all, Wave Life Sciences, which is based in Cambridge, Massachusetts, announced updates for this current year on January 6th. Wave has the very first allele-specific therapies for HD. They have two of them. And after discussions with the FDA, they plan to refile their investigational new drug, or IND, application in the first half of this year. And at the same time, they're on track to file a clinical trial application in Europe the first half of this year. So this means that the first human gene silencing clinical trials that we had hoped to be seeing in the United States have been put on hold, but will be going to Europe. So watch our website and our Facebook page for information about contacting the FDA to let them know that we need clinical trials in the U.S. and we need them now. Related to today's show, Dr. Karen Anderson's team at Georgetown University recently completed a study of suicidal ideation in HD patients. The results of the study, which were published in Psychiatry Advisor on January 9th, show that hopelessness and anxiety are most predictive of suicidal ideation in HD. Hopelessness increased the odds by 25%, and anxiety more than doubled the odds of suicidal ideation in this study. Impulsivity was also significant for predicting suicidal ideation. So those are, according to this study, the three things to really be aware of: hopelessness, anxiety, and impulsivity. Finally, Teva Pharmaceuticals hopes to launch its SD809 product in the first half of the year and its dyskinesia product late in the second half. SD809 is the newest drug to treat chorea, and so that's going to be a really important development for people who are dealing with chorea. The drug for dyskinesia is potentially important for people who have HD but have the rigidity rather than the chorea. And I think that's all for now, so be sure to tune in next week. Till then, have a safe night, and may this be the year of the cure.